It's Thursday. I'm Gab. He's Jules. Jules, we got so much stuff going on because Mauricio Pochettino winning his first trophy as Paris Saint-Germain manager. I think his first trophy ever, perhaps. And we'll be joined by Frank LeBeuf to talk a little bit about that in a minute. Manchester United, top of the league, first time in January, first time since the Sir Alex Ferguson era. Bayern Munich, out of the German Cup. Wow, so I don't mean to laugh. I don't mean to belittle.
Yeah, you did.
But let's start with Tottenham Hotspur, because we've been talking this season about their chances, whether they're going to be better or worse than last year, how they're pushing. And then I feel like I've seen this again. I think they've dropped 10 points from leading positions. They played Fulham last night. You figure, you know, not easy, but Fulham, no time to prepare as well. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
And doesn't work out.
Same pattern, Gab. They take the lead. They play well for 25 minutes, and then they stop attacking, and they just want to protect that lead. They want to control the game, to manage the game. But there's another hour to go.
But is that a bad idea necessarily when you've got Son and Harry Kane and all these great counterattackers?
No, but you don't even counterattack. You do nothing. You just sit deep and you just wait. And we saw that against Wolves. Guess what? Man, Wolves scored in the end. We saw that against Palace. Guess what? Palace scored in the end. And now we see that at home against Fulham, where you just stop playing. Harry Kane, one shot on target the whole game. That's his goal, 20 minutes in. After that, nothing. Just nothing. And I just don't understand why. I'm all for protecting a lead in the last 10 minutes. You bring another centre-backs in, or I don't know, you put a back five and you make sure that you don't leave too much space and etc. But not when there's an hour to go. Don't give that extra confidence to the opposition team. Don't invite that pressure. Don't let them play.
I take your point. I'm wondering if maybe this was a game where, you know, I thought Ndombele was very good when he was on the pitch. This was maybe a game where, and I always mention him, but if you have a Lo Celso that you can bring on, then maybe all of a sudden you can keep the ball more, you can keep the ball further away. You know, you can be a little bit more balanced in how you do it, you know, rather than going out. I mean, if you're Jose right now, do you go and do you knock at Daniel Levy's door and say, look, don't look at me. This is the best I can do in this situation.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's the best he can do. And I don't know, the players, at least the last time I spoke to some of them, they were happy. But since December the 6th, when they were on top of the table, They've won 1 in 7 in the league. They lost 2 and drew 4. I mean, this is not good enough. This is not good enough. And I think you could say, oh, yeah, but Jose needs better player, or he needs different profiles there and there. I still think that he gets it wrong. That tactics is wrong because the players are doing what he says. He's saying, okay, we're in the lead. We saw it against Arsenal in that second half, and they were 2-0 up, and that was fine, and they managed the game out, and okay, good. But as we said, against Wolves, against Palace, against Fulham, this is just not good enough. I'm sorry. You keep attacking last night in a game against in a team against Fulham who had played three days before with the strongest team in the FA Cup because they didn't think they would play again for another week.
Yeah, that's an important. Sorry, I want to talk about this because Scott Parker, the Fulham manager, coming out and he wasn't happy. I feel like Scott Parker never really gets angry because he's too nice a guy. This is about as angry as this is furious Scott Parker. But I think he completely has a point, right? So the Spurs were supposed to play Aston Villa. Aston Villa can't play because they have a COVID outbreak. And so the league looks at it and says, oh, look, free date, Spurs, you're available. You need to make up your game against Fulham. Okay, Fulham, you go play.
And that's Monday afternoon.
Monday he gets confirmation of this, right? Fulham themselves have had their own COVID outbreak, which is why their game against Spurs was postponed. A lot of their guys are unavailable or aren't fully fit. You find out so late. You're supposed to go and prepare for games. Look, I understand why the Premier League did this. It's necessary. But understand, too, that this whole season comes with a gigantic asterisk because these are not normal conditions. And I feel for Scott Parker a little bit. That said, I'm with you. I don't see how Tottenham threw this game away. And it's happened again and again. Yeah. And we go out, and this is why I have such an issue, when people bring up mentality and winning mentality and all this stuff, right? People use mentality when they can't really explain something, right? So when Spurs perhaps play poorly and they win. Oh, it's the mentality. It's Jose's mentality, winning mentality. It's the same Jose. It's the same mentality. It's not mentality. It's simply perhaps an approach that didn't work. But also, I think credit to Fulham for believing and for really going for the equalizer and having the belief that they could go and get it.
But they were led to do that. And I just think it's a real shame because Spurs could have gone and win that game 3-0.
All right, let's try to figure this out, Jules, because when you're saying this is actual instructions from Mourinho to his team. Now, as I see it, it's more a case of I'm going to defend deeper because I defend well and I'm comfortable defending well. I think that's what he's trying to engender. You know, a lot of times we talk about teams that are comfortable playing without the ball, right? Teams that they can sit out there and they can play for hours and the other team can't get a shot off, right? Because they're good and they're sitting deep, and that's fine. And then you have other teams that sit deep and are all desperate and flailing all over the place.
Yeah.
Is that what you see in Tottenham? Did you see them as uncomfortable when they were sitting deep?
I just see they conceded 5 in the last 6 games.
Yeah, I know. Five I can count 2. Those are just numbers.
But that, it shows you that they don't defend well. Otherwise, they would not concede goals. And I think if you invite the pressure, you put yourself in a position where the other team will have the opportunity and the chance to create chances and to score goals. You know, and I just think, if you look at Harry Kane, right? Yesterday, he made 14 passes, 1-4. 14 passes against Fulham at home in 90 minutes.
And this is the new Harry Kane, the guy who's number 9 and number 10 at the same time, right?
And I don't know how he feels. And maybe he's happy with the season, with his numbers, I don't know. But if I was a player of his ability in a team like this, where I would spend an hour of that kind of game, and I'm not talking, you know, a game against Liverpool or City where you know you have to put that extra effort and defend because that can give you a win. But in a team against a team like this, like Fulham, where you're Harry Kane, and you there's nothing for you in that game. Yeah, you score, okay, great cross by Reguilon, great header, perfect. But after that, you've got nothing. I mean, I would be fuming.
So you see this more as an issue of that? Because it seems to me there is a dichotomy here. Are they not attacking enough, or are they just not good enough in terms of being comfortable off
the ball? I just don't understand why they stop attacking, why they stop playing and just want to defend their lead.
Because part of me says, I know Eric Dyer's done well since under Mourinho, but for me it's still Eric Dyer. Part of me thinks that if I'm playing Dyer, Davinson Sanchez, who wasn't playing earlier this year and who I'm not sure how on board with him Mourinho is. Serge Aurier, who has made progress but is still fundamentally an attacking fullback. And Reguilon, who we know is an attacking fullback. If I'm going to go and try to defend with those guys, I will need cover from my midfield. And so naturally, I will be sucked to defend deeper.
Now, why do you want to defend, Gab? You 1-0 up after 25 minutes. Why you
Well, that's what I'm
defend?
Driving at. So is it perhaps a personnel issue? If we had a fully fit Alderweireld in there, would it be different?
No, because we saw against Wolves and against Palace and against loads of other teams. I just think that's what they do, and I think it worked for a time, but I don't think it's working anymore, or at least you take too much. It's too risky. And I don't understand why when you have players like Son and Kane and, I mean, Sissoko played with Winks and Højbjerg. But Lamela came on, and you've got other players like that. Why? I just don't get it. But maybe in the end they will be champions, or I don't know.
And you'll prove you wrong again.
Yeah. But I find it so frustrating, and I'm not even a Spurs fan or a Spurs player, but I find it so frustrating watching them when they can be so good for 25 minutes, and they should keep playing like this, and then they change.
I think at this stage of his career, it's very easy to lampoon Mourinho.
I'm not lampooning him.
No,
I'm just saying that this is choice, and I don't understand it.
I wonder if there's something here, if there's a piece of the picture that we're not seeing. And I think specifically in this season, I think there might be players off form or who have issues. Like, it's possible he simply made an incorrect decision. But I also wonder if there isn't something else going on that we might find out later on, you know, prompts some of these performances from the players, something with the fitness levels perhaps, or 'cause it's not rational. Even within the Mourinho sphere, right? He's not, again, it's easy, he's not a caricature of himself. We've established that, we agree with that, right? He's done very well. Spurs, I think, are a better team this year than they were last year. And I think he's done a very good job. But you're right, this stint is really, I think, difficult. And even, I'll tell you what, Cavaliers doesn't score, they win 1-0. It's still not a good performance.
No,
it's three
it's
points,
not.
But it's not a good performance. But
remember after the Palace game, we said, we were not worried about the defeat at Liverpool, for example, because that, you know, it was the last minute, it was the header by Firmino. But we were worried about that second half against Palace, where they were just...
You stopped playing.
Yeah, and we're so deep. And again, we saw it at home this time, because before it was only away. But at home, against a team like Fulham, because they did against Arsenal, and we said they saw the game out, no problem. But I just, I don't know.
I go back to this. These aren't players who are trained, I think, you know, just in terms of their characteristics and what they're used to before, to be comfortable defending. This isn't Bonucci and Chiellini who say you have the ball for an hour and
no.
You'll never shoot on goal, right?
Yeah.
These are players, if you look at Davinson Sanchez coming through the ranks at Ajax, other viral, funnily enough, another former Ajax guy, Aurier, we've covered. I don't think it works in that sense. I want to ask you about, I think he's Tottenham's highest earner, actually, Gareth Bale, despite the fact that Real Madrid are paying a big chunk of his salary. I mean, he comes off the bench against Marine. Is he fit? Is he not fit? You got the Welsh connections. Should people be making a bigger deal of this?
Yes and no. I mean, there must be a reason why he doesn't play in the league. It's because I don't know why he doesn't
play. Or even against Mourinho, for that matter.
But there must be a reason why Mourinho doesn't rely on him in those kind of games, even for the last 10 or 15 minutes. Once Fulham have scored, and then suddenly, as we saw again against Fulham and we saw against Palace, suddenly they go, oh no, we're going to draw points. Let's attack again. And then they attack again, and they usually create chances, which they've done. I mean, it's so unbelievable. And then maybe he could be useful for you there. But if he doesn't even think that is an option there.
I would have thought that there would be some situations where you would play Bale and Kane together up front.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you can play Son and Bergvall. I realize, you know.
Do you think,
Bale right now, I don't think you can ask him to play on a Mourinho team, to play on the wing. And do the up down defensive work, right? He's not going to work like he can't. You know, he can't. He's maybe not yet. But why can't he play up front with Kane?
Do you think that when they decided to go and sign him, the idea was that he would play domestic cups and Europa League, or do you think that Mourinho thought, okay, yeah, that he would be a good option, but since then Mourinho has seen a training or during games, I don't know whether. And realize, okay, no, I can't trust him in the league.
I would lean towards that. You know, I think there's a combination of, well, maybe the stadium will reopen and Gareth Bale will be a draw and whatever, and it's a lower risk gamble. You know, if we like him and he does well and he's happy, then maybe we can think about signing him, renegotiating his deal, whatever. I think they viewed it that way. But then obviously, you know, the grounds are still shut. I don't think they may well not reopen this year. He's not gonna move the needle there. I think most likely Spurs would have sold out anyway, their new ground, even without Bale.
Without him even.
So there would have been a footballing element to it. And I think seeing him up close for 4 or 5 months, you know, with the injuries and ever, I think you have to look around. How much is he costing me and what am I getting out of him? I think that's a difficult part to really go and really go and judge that. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Paris Saint-Germain played Olympique Marseille in the Trophée du Champion, which is basically the Community Shield, if you really want to go there.
Super Cup.
French Super Cup. Yeah. Super Cup. Anyway, the big news is Pochettino won his first trophy, not just for Paris Saint-Germain, but the first trophy ever as a manager. Yeah. But André Villas-Boas says the best team lost. So to help us sort this out, let's go. We're joined by Frank Leboeuf. Let's see what he thinks. Frank, is AVB right?
It's not, of course not. I think it's only fair to say that Paris Saint-Germain deserved to win that game, even if it wasn't the biggest game and the best game that I ever seen. And I was watching Tottenham against Fulham at the same time that I was watching Marseille, Paris Saint-Germain-Marseille. And I think I thought the TV, one TV was wrong. One was too slow, one was too fast, but it wasn't the same level of football, you know. And that's maybe the difference between the English football and the French football. But no, of course not. Paris Saint-Germain, I think, deserved to play, even if I don't recognize Paris Saint-Germain from the years in the past. I think it's not the same Paris Saint-Germain. This way, maybe it's more difficult for them to win against any Ligue 1 team this season, even if they mainly do. But I think they did drop in terms of qualities, and maybe the players have to realize that they have to work better than that if they want to be like they used to be and maybe a contender for the Champions League. But that game they won, and AVB is wrong, because I think Paris Saint-Germain could have won like maybe 4-1 or 5-1 this game.
Right. Well, we'll get back to that point, because I think it's a really good one about Paris Saint-Germain's level versus recent years, perhaps later in our podcast-only segment. But, Jules, I'm assuming you agree with Frank that AVB is wrong. You're going to disrespect AVB?
No, but you know what's disappointing is that this is silly, what he said was silly. However, this is the best Marseille performance we've seen against PSG since AVB took over. That was his third game against PSG. Even in the win in September, they didn't play as well as they did last night. And then his first game, they got battered 4-0. He got it completely wrong. But so why would you come up with something that silly when you could actually say, you know what, we were close. We were not that far, and we actually played well. They deserve to win, and they're still better than us. But we're getting there. Like, that's what Thauvin said. And Thauvin had a really good game, and that's what Thauvin said. But don't come out and say something stupid like this.
All right, let's turn it back to the star power here, the glitter here. Neymar, starting on the bench. I don't know if it was maybe, I'm sure it was because he was holidays and his five-day party.
He's been injured.
Yeah. But anyway, he comes on, and I think there was some trepidation here, because the last time he played Marseille, it obviously ended in investigations and fisticuffs with his nemesis, Alvaro. Frank, I thought Neymar was disciplined and good, at least during the game. Afterwards, he did some trolling. But what did you think of Neymar?
It was a good comeback. He did what he had to do. We knew that he will go and provoke Alvaro, and he did very well. And Alvaro getting to the trick, you know, making fouls, getting a yellow card, maybe deserved a red one on the free kick that Neymar got very close to the 16-yard box. Nothing to say about Neymar. You know, he likes to provoke, and he's maybe where he's the best. When he doesn't get injured. When he scored the goal, we know that he was mocking Alvaro, but he did what he had to do, and we all pleased, you know, when he played that way, when he goes and tries to take on the players, when he tries to score goals. So nothing much to say about him. I think it was good for him to stay on the bench and start maybe just for 15 minutes. To just get back into the game and get his fitness back.
I love Jules talking to Frank about this, because, as we've mentioned before, but just to remind people, Frank is obviously a World Cup winning defender, so he's going to view Neymar from the perspective of a defender. Yeah. In other words, a guy who likes to provoke defenders.
If you provoke me, I'll...
Yeah. But equally, not many people know this, that Frank was a number 10 early in his career, and if it wasn't for a certain David Ginola... at his club, he might have never played in central defense.
Exactly.
So he can see both sides. Quickly to wrap this, your take on Neymar's comeback?
I thought the most interesting was that he obviously missed the first two games of Pochettino, and we were not sure where he would play on the Poch. And he played on the left-hand side. Verratti stayed as a number 10 centrally, which is his new position with Pochettino. And I thought that was interesting. He looked fit. He was really good when he came on, scored that goal. The trolling was always going to come. And guess what? Him and Alvaro meet again February the 7th, because that's the return game in the return fixture in the league, this time at the Velodrome. So that would be interesting.
After the game, we touched upon it. The trolling, Neymar, Alvaro, and social media. Give us a background. Just tell us a story. And do you think it adds something? Do you think it takes anything away? Do you think it's just entertainment?
I just think that Neymar could not help himself. And you knew it was coming. You were just wondering when. There was a little story on Instagram mocking Payet when PSG lost the Champions League final. Payet reminded everyone that Marseille had won the Champions League before and PSG still not. Payet, by the way, who's only ever won his local domestic cup in the Ile de la Réunion where he came from before. So I'm not sure how much he can talk about winning trophies and finals.
No, but he played for West Ham and West Ham won the World Cup.
Yeah,
but anyway,
true. So there was a dig at Payet first, and then obviously the one for Alvaro came, and the little celebration as well that he did after his goal. And Alvaro, to be fair to him, got back at him and also trolled him back in French, whereas Neymar did it in Portuguese. And like we said, they're meeting again, which can't end well the third time round, because as you said, the first time it was
toxic. I have to say, this trolling, right? Like, is it a PSG thing? Is it a French football? Because
Because
I'm going to go out, right? In the Premier League, we don't see this trolling via social media between top stars. Maybe they're more controlled. Maybe they're just more boring or whatever. In La Liga, we had it a little bit in years past with Gerard Pique and Sergio Ramos.
Yeah.
But those are two guys who've been, you know, that they've been frenemies their entire life. And it kind of feels like it's kind of gone away. In Italy, we don't see it. In the Bundesliga, no, the funny guys, you know, anyway, German humor. Funny guys are the people who run the club accounts. I like it. I think it adds a WWE quality to everything. As you know, I'm a big wrestling fan. Frank, if you've been playing, I mean, what do you make of this? Is this a distraction? Is it something? Are you playing with fire when you do this?
Yeah, you do play with fire, especially Neymar. Alvaro doesn't risk too much. Alvaro is the guy who's going to try kicking, you know, Neymar on the third game. The thing is, they behave like kids. That's the main concern for me. You know, maybe in England they don't talk. You know, I'm always, let's say, scared and more respect somebody who doesn't respond to me, because I don't know what to expect when I'm going to see him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think if Neymar wanted to tease and mock Alvaro, that's, well, whatever he wants to do, you know, he can do, and that's really Neymar. I would have been Alvaro. I wouldn't respond to Neymar. I would have waited the next game to show him my respect. That's what it is. We don't see that in England, because I played against terrible people, you know, on the field. Roy Keane, I played with people, you know, Dennis Wise. I played against Vinnie Jones. They don't talk. They don't talk. They do.
Yeah, their response comes when their boot ends up in your sphincter, yeah, basically. Yeah,
exactly.
That's what it is.
Jules, I want to talk about Maurizio Icardi, because obviously he's back. That's on the score sheet. How important is it that there's a center forward, with all my love for Moise Kean, of course? And is this it? Is this the missing piece of the puzzle? Does his presence free up Mbappe and Neymar to do more things? Or, because this was the criticism we covered before, is there the risk that you just have a guy hanging around the six-yard box doing nothing unless the ball comes to him?
Well, that was not the case yesterday. He had been one of the criticism before, but certainly not in that game against Marseille, where he was very involved, even in the linker play, in the builder play. He had a really good first half where he hit the bar, scored the goal, of course. I think he had 5 shots, 3 on target. Then he got the penalty in the second half, but I thought he looked fitter. His movement was good. I think maybe the fact that Pochettino has arrived, and certainly you could imagine the relationship that those two can have could be pretty special. And from what I was told, Pochettino has been talking a lot with Icardi and the whole dressing room, but certainly with Icardi, I think you could see a much, much improved Icardi than the one we had in 2020, which before the pandemic wasn't good. After the pandemic had lost his place in the team, even in the final eight when Cavani wasn't there, he was still not playing. So I think there is, 2020 was bad, and 2021 already looked much, much better just two games in for Icardi.
Frank, Icardi is one of the most eccentric people in world football. I mean, when we talk about weird, you know, personally, you know the...
Whoa, like what?
Well, everything about him.
Go on.
Everything about him. From the fact that every inch of his body has ink on it, to the pictures going back to the Maxi situation and Wanda, to calling out the Inter fans saying he was going to fight all of them. He's an unusual person. Variety is the spice, is the spice of life. And look, I'm frankly not surprised, Frank, that maybe Pochettino's going to have a better handle on him than Thomas Tuchel, who is also eccentric in his own way, but
very,
he's obviously
different.
A bit Teutonic. But what's your take on Icardi? Is he, do you agree that he can be the missing piece of the puzzle here?
Yes, definitely, and better than Keane for me. We can see all the quality that Keane has comparing to Icardi, but Icardi is a player like David Trezeguet, for example. You know, the guy is a hunter of balls in the 16-yard box, where he's going to get it. And if he's really focused on his football, when he knows what to do, when he, like yesterday when he played against Marseille, where he was put every time in a very good position to score goals or to give an assist, I'm really keen on him when he's really 100% into football. As you said, you know, outside of football, he's a little bit crazy and makes some comments that he shouldn't do and put him outside of the football when he's on the field. So when he's like that, I like him, and he showed it yesterday. He's the type of guy that you need. And with Pochettino, who is a Latin person, is maybe the best person to understand another Latin person, which wasn't the case for Tuchel.
Well, we like to think that we're Latin in Milan as well, and many of us didn't understand him either. But I want to ask you. I know you, Frank. You want to talk about my boy Marco Verratti, who has been playing in a new position under Pochettino. It's something that they tried before briefly with the Italian national team. I don't know. He's effectively playing further up the pitch, playing as an attacking midfielder, almost in the hole. Does this make sense to you? How do you see it?
Well, it makes sense to me in order that he's able to, when he has the ball, to serve his teammates the best way, like a Kevin De Bruyne can do, Verratti also can do. He doesn't lose the ball. He has excellencies in his feet when he gives the ball to somebody else. The thing is, his teammates right now have to look for him in order to give him the ball. Well, he should be obvious to see him every time they have the ball. That's the thing of a number 10, a leader of a team. And so far, they don't find him easily. As a number 6, when he has the football, the game in front of him, it's easier for him to be found. Now, it's not his hiding, but he's looking position between the lines to be in the best position in order for his teammates to give him the ball. That's the main concern about his new position, about Verratti, because I see less of him than before. And it's so important in the middle of the park for Paris Saint-Germain that they have to work on that if Pochettino was to keep on positioning Verratti as a number 10.
Jules, that is one of the toughest things to do. I think, you know, we often say, well, you play between the lines or space between the lines, but in addition to what you do when you have the ball, I think Frank made an excellent point, because the way you receive the ball when you play in that role is completely different. It's going to be usually on the half turn,
back to goal,
or back to goal, and then you got to turn. So how do you learn that while running, while continuing to play?
Yeah.
I mean, is this something that this is an individual having to add something to his repertoire?
Yeah, and change a little bit at 28, which, you know, it's not easy, and especially when you don't really have time to work it on a training, because you don't really train, you play so much. And I think obviously the higher you play on the pitch, the more crowded it is. You know, if you played in your 30 yards, you can easily get the ball. There's less pressure than if you play so high and you've got the opposition team's two central midfielders plus the back four behind and all of that. So he will have to deal with that and learn how to, like Frank said, find the right position his body right. But also he will have to adapt himself to the movement of other players in his area, because as we saw last night, for example, Angel Di Maria plays a lot inside. Yeah. He starts as a sort of a right winger, but comes inside a lot, and Verratti can't stay too close to him either. Whereas before it was other players around Verratti adapting themselves to Verratti because he was the main man there. Now it's a bit different for him. So all that is new. I think he's intelligent and talented enough to make it, though.
And as you mentioned, the players around him are players like Mbappe and Neymar, who rightly are accustomed to kind of following their instincts on the pitch and having others defer to him. I want to take it back, Frank, to something you asked before, something you raised before, about this version of Paris Saint-Germain versus the one of 2 or 3 years ago, and whether it's a case, obviously it's a much tighter race in Ligue 1 this year, whether it's a case of Marseille and Lyon improving, or whether it's a case of Paris Saint-Germain going backwards, perhaps as a result of some of the financial fair play restrictions, and they can't spend the way they did in the past.
My point of view goes for every top teams in Europe, where the excellency doesn't work for any team. Right now, we see Liverpool, we saw Manchester City, they're getting better, but they're having a very difficult start. We, of course, see Barcelona. We see Juventus struggling also in Calcio. And we see Paris Saint-Germain also. And I think it's all teams in the top level drop dramatically. Is it because of the pandemic? Is it because of the preparation? Maybe the time off they didn't have, you know, between the final eight and the new season? Certainly, I really think it's what it is. But it's also maybe some players and some generations who have to be changed by the coach and by the clubs, those dynamics. But it's not definitely for me that the others are getting better. It's really because those top clubs dropped technically, physically, especially, and maybe tactically. We can see that Barcelona is looking for a new way of playing. Paris Saint-Germain, we just talked about it, trying to find also another way to play with Verratti as a number 10, even if they have Mbappé, Neymar, and Di Maria. So I don't know what's going on with those clubs, but they have to find a solution, especially Paris. Paris is struggling, lost many games during the season. I don't doubt that they're going to be champion of France at the end of the season, because it's still better than the others. But they're struggling, and they have to wonder why they do that and how come they drop like maybe two or three levels from the past seasons.
I think there's a few reasons. One is that other teams can also improve, and we saw that when Monaco, with an amazing team, and Leo Jardim won that title. That's the only title PSG haven't won in the last 10 years. 10 years this year.
By the way, his career really took off after that, didn't it? Sorry, that's one for another time.
That's
one of the mysteries of football.
Leo, if you're watching and listening. So that's the first thing. And Lyon have certainly improved, and they're looking really good. Marseille have improved, for sure. Lille have improved.
Have they improved, though? Because Frank seems to suggest that maybe it's not so much that they've improved.
No, I think they improve. I think Lyon are better than last year. Marseille are better than last year. Lille are better than last year. Even Monaco are better than last year. I don't think Monaco could compete for the title, but certainly the others can.
By the way, sorry, I have to interject, Cal, myself. You're saying Lille are better than last year, despite losing Osimhen and Gabriel. That says
that's
a lot.
Incredible.
And despite the ownership changing and everything, and that really says a lot about that team. Sorry.
It does. No, and Christophe Galtier, big up. Right. Me and Frank are big fans of Galtier and his work anyway. Yeah. So that's the first thing. Others can improve, and others have improved. Then you're right, but you said that with FFP, they could not do the spending that they want or they have done before. And three, Frank is right as well. When there's no preparation, when you've had players with COVID, almost half of your team, when you haven't been able this season to play your strongest 11 at all because you've always had injuries or illnesses and this and that, you change managers compared to others who maybe have had a bit more stability, then you end up with this where they're still favourite to win it and you could easily see them winning it, but they're not as dominant league-wise as they have been even last year or the year before.
You know, I do wonder, and just to finish this out, and you know what, I'm going to give you a story idea that I think you should write for a website, because there is a parallel universe where Paris Saint-Germain, who obviously have this tremendous youth academy,
yeah,
make a whole range of different decisions with many of those young players that they basically had to sell off to meet financial
fair play. Ajax style.
Well, what if they hadn't done that? What if they'd kept the Nkunkus and whatever? Would we be in a completely different situation right now? I don't know. It's one of those sort of alternate reality of fantasies. Go back, replay the 5 years with the benefit of hindsight, see where we are. Frank, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, guys. Always a pleasure.
All right, enough PSG. Sorry, Jules. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
Huge game coming up for Liverpool Sunday against Manchester United. Jules, how do you assess where they are right now? And also, what do you make of Klopp's comments last week pointing out that United have had more penalties in 2 years than Liverpool have had in 5.5 years? Is this mind games?
Mind games. I love it. It's great. And it's true. And it's true. However, if you look at just at this season, they've had the same amount of penalties. So I don't think that gives you an edge or anything like this. But Liverpool, the last three games have been in the league, have been fairly disappointed, as we know, the defeat at Southampton, the draws, the one with Newcastle especially, well, the one with West Brom as well, I guess. Plus, there was the one with Fulham before. We thought, after the win against Palace, when they won 7-0 and they destroyed them, that okay, the boss was back. But now, the dynamic has changed a little bit. So, a huge game. Maybe that's the best game that it could happen for them.
They look tired, but I think also, you're right, it's a good situation. You have a chance to go back top. Yeah. And you will have had, what, like 9-10 days to rest? And as far as these penalties are concerned, Klopp doesn't do mind games.
Nah, but Manchester United do it the hard way, but my boy Paul Pogba scores a worldie, kind of, because there's a little deflection on it, but still to beat Burnley and take United to the top of the league. Gab, you wrote a column about this.
There was a deflection, Jules, but it was beautiful. Wonderful coordination, beautiful to do. Yeah, look, I don't think it's necessarily relevant that we look at this and say, well, they probably won't win the league anyway, and City and Liverpool are better sides. I think they are better sides. I don't think they'll win the league. But it's the first time they're top of the league in 8 years. And the point I made in my column was, you know, and I'm not, we'll find out if this was the right decision, but I just think it was interesting, and corporations do this all the time, right? After bringing in big, proven, brand-name managers who are going to rock the boat and who are going to be disruptors, to use a venture capital word, they went for the company man. And like, it's not an insult. Jan Ågefjortoft called them a company
man. The debate.
They went for him. And now they're further along in terms of results anyway.
Yeah.
It's up to Solskjaer now to build on this, but it does give him that little bit of capital that I think gives him more room to maneuver. Mm. No Lionel Messi, but Barca eventually overcome Real Sociedad in the Spanish Super Cup Final Four on penalties. Jules, what did you make of it?
Well, we talked about AVB and saying that Marseille were the better side and lost that game, which was not true. However, you could say that for Real Sociedad, and I think you'd be right, because I thought they were the better side.
Without David Silva as well.
Without David Silva, Ter Stegen was by far, and I mean by far, the best player on the pitch and in the Barca team. And when your goalkeeper is the best player by far, it's never a good thing. But without Messi, maybe that was to be expected. This is a team that's still so dependent on him. And without him, I think they look a bit lost at times.
Yeah, Ter Stegen did the Messi impression in this game.
Yeah, exactly.
But by the way, how did Frankie de Jong do that, twisting his body like a weird pretzel?
It was a bit of a matrix, the way he and headed the ball. That was pretty good. Staying in Spain, Atletico Madrid beat Sevilla 2-0 in one of the games in hand they had to play on Tuesday night to extend the lead at the top of La Liga table to 4 points, and they still have 2 games in hand. Gab, how big was that? Because Sevilla, as we've been saying, were in good form.
I think it's huge, and I'll tell you what, this is the Atleti that is Jekyll and Hyde, right? This was old school Atleti that we saw here. Correa coming up big for them. This was Super Cholo 1.0. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. And it's the way you want to play against a Lopetegui team. And Sevilla, of course, coming off that win over the weekend against Real Sociedad with an Nesri hat-trick. I thought this is another team that you've knocked off.
Yeah.
A top six team where you could have lost points to. It's big. And I think they can go ahead and do this.
And how good is Jules Koundé, though, at Sevilla? Oh, my God, Jules, I love you so much.
Yeah, get excited about the French guy.
So
after
much,
the two goals.
So sure. much, so much.
Bayern Munich won't be winning the treble this season. In fact, if you count what happened Wednesday night as a defeat, they've lost more games in the first 13 days of January than they have in the entire 365 days of 2020. They gave up an injury time equalizer to second division Holstein Kiel and then lose on penalties. Jules, can we stop with this best team in the world nonsense and assess the fact that there's serious issues right now?
Yeah, they're not right now the best team in the world. They're nowhere near the team they were when they won the Champions League, when they were walking on everybody else. And Flick played a really strong team. Let's not think that he played the kids because he was a second division team in Kiel in the Cup. No, this was a really strong team. And Lewandowski was on the bench, but he still
Pavard,
came on.
Pavard, Lucas Hernandez, Tolisso, Müller, Neuer. That's five world champions that's there.
Plus Gnabry, plus
Lewandowski coming on.
Yeah,
plus Kim, come on,
they
man.
Were strong. And you know what's disappointing? I don't know why Benjamin Pavard doesn't take a penalty in the shootout. I mean, he's a World Cup winner. He's far more experienced than Marc Roca, for example, who, bless him, missed it and caused this team the defeat.
Yeah, so Mark Rock is a more technically skilled player.
I know, but still. Inter are taken to extra time by Fiorentina in the Coppa d'Italia, and Romelu Lukaku has to come off the bench to get it done and score the winner. Gab, how are they looking ahead of their big clash with Juve this weekend?
Well, no doubt Conte will point out that they're going to be more tired because
of
extra time, although Juve had to play extra time too.
Yeah.
What was interesting to me, what stood out for me about this game is he played Christian Eriksen deeper in a deep playmaking role, in the Braz role.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Me too.
You know, I wonder if this means, first of all, he can play that role. He's done similar roles in the past. But secondly, I wonder if it means that maybe he's having a rethink. Oh, look, maybe
Surely
it's actually impossible. Maybe it's impossible to sell this guy because he makes way too much money. Maybe I keep him and maybe he unlocks defenses for me. Maybe reinvent him. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Manchester City beat Brighton 1-0 as Pep sticks to the strikerless system and Raheem Sterling misses a late penalty. Dropped a third, they have a game in hand, but Jules, were you expecting a bit more?
A little bit, I have to say. A bit more urgency at times, but they were comfortable because Brighton came to defend clearly.
Well, with like six central defenders
they
in the lineup.
Six centre-backs. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen this before. And I know they were not all playing centre-backs.
No, no, no.
But six centre-backs.
I don't think he was expecting that from Potter. And again, I certainly wasn't expecting him to leave out, you know, Mopé and Gross and some of these other guys.
No, but hey, they did the job. Again, another game where they don't concede. By far, best defense in the league. And they're still looking really strong and you know, marching on, really.
Yeah.
Juventus also need extra time to win their Coppa d'Italia game against Genoa. And they also have to bring Ronaldo off the bench. Gab, what do we read into this?
Well, we read into this that Juventus could care less about the Coppa Italia because they played all these guys. You know, when you start seeing shirt numbers of 50, 68, they played all these dudes, Wesley, Dragusin.
Yeah, Hamza Faya, the Tunisian.
Who scored a goal?
Yeah, scored a goal.
That's fine. They move on. They move forward. They got the kids some playing time. And they're going to be better rested at the weekend. Now, how about some love for Carletto Ancelotti in Everton? They beat Wolves and they're joint third despite playing Sigurdsson and James Rodriguez. This has to be the slowest front two in history. Perhaps one of the most technically gifted, but come on, man.
It's almost like if Carlo wanted to take the mickey out of the force number nine, you know, geniuses and stuff. I can do better than you. I can have Sigurdsson and James in there.
We have to point out Dominic Calvert-Lewandowski injured. Cenk Tosun not very good, so maybe that's why. But.
Or maybe it was not James Rodriguez, but maybe James Rodriguez, as Jamie Redknapp called him on Sky Sports. I don't know. I don't know who that player was, James Rodriguez, but hey. A good win. Good win for them. And they, as we said, they're doing a great job there. Zlatan Ibrahimovic returns to the starting lineup, but Milan still need penalties and Tataru Sanu to be the hero to beat Torino and move on to the next round of the Coppa d'Italia.
They go penalties, but hey, you know, they move forward. And I think the big thing here is that Zlatan plays.
Yeah, you gave him some
90
time,
minutes.
Some
we saw Calabria midfield again.
Yeah.
Could be an alternative if Kalulu turns out to be as good as some French people think he is. So all good there. The Sun reports that Nuno Espirito Santo was very close to taking the Arsenal job before they turned to Mikel Arteta instead. Would this have made sense, or would this have
not
been
sure.
a mistake? Or is
not
this
sure,
even,
not sure. And I'm
you think
not even
this is
sure
something
this is true?
That, like, yeah, I think this might be something that somebody, not him, obviously,
of course not him,
but somebody in the Mendesosphere, perhaps kind of totally invented.
Yeah,
yeah, because you really want to hand the club to those people rather than the nice people running
and again, Arsenal are happy with Mikel Arteta anyway, so I don't think they would have any regrets, even if that was true. The investigation into Luis Suarez and Juventus general manager Fabio Paratici continues, Gab, you know, over him trying to get a passport and doing the exams and all of that. Is the club really in trouble? And should it be in trouble?
I mean, again, they keep looking into this. Again, for those who weren't paying attention, I'm sure Luis Suarez was available. They had reached a deal to sign him, but he had to get his EU passport because there's a limit on the number. Because weirdly, even though he's been in Spain for 10 years, the guy still doesn't have an EU passport. To do that, he had, of course, had to take an Italian test. Yeah. As it turned out, the test was pretty much rigged. and those people who gave him the test are in serious trouble. The question is, how much did Fabio Paratici, Juventus' general manager, have to do with this? We know he called in some favors. He called a government minister who's a childhood friend of his. But the point you were making is, by the time that he went to take his test, we had already gone for Morata instead. So we're out of this at this point. Yeah. If he did do something he wasn't supposed to do, this is all on Luis Suarez. Luka Jovic is reportedly on the verge of going back to Eintracht Frankfurt on loan, where he'll be, well, who replaced the legendary Bastos, of course, who's moved on to Bruges. Jules, does this mean that Real Madrid might bring in another body up front this January?
I don't think so. I think they'll have Maya Nodaz and Karim Benzema, and I think they'd be happy with that.
Wait, but you need to replace him in the Jovic role and the role of the guy who...
The role who's never played.
Since at the end of the... Wait, Mariano can do that.
Mariano can do that. And then I guess you put him out on the market. He will play regularly with Frankfurt, which doesn't do for you. And his stake will hopefully rise, and maybe you sell him, or at least if he comes back, he comes back full of confidence if he's had a good second half of the season. You know, it could be a win-win for Real, or a lose-lose. I guess you don't know. Social distancing on goal celebrations is now apparently a thing in the Premier League, with some suggesting that players should do more to avoid spreading the virus. So, just before you answer, so I understand it well, you should not be allowed to celebrate with your own teammates who are in your bubble, who you see every day, right?
Yes, and who you train with every day. Okay. Look, I don't know where this story has come from, but it's become a big thing. Wow. We both live in London. We read the English media.
Yeah.
They talked about it last night. I don't know why all of a sudden it's an issue when, you know, maybe it's because there's a more virulent strain of the virus. I don't know. But it just seems very, very odd to me when these people are being tested continuously. The other thing that's odd to me is, in highlighting this, they're all praising Harry Kane because they showed his goal celebration where, you know, rather than going and hugging people, he just went and he high-fived them, right? And I'm thinking, okay, but we're all told that we need to wash our hands constantly, right? If this really is such a big issue, surely people touching another dude's hands when your hands are the most likely thing to in your eyes.
I agree with you.
I don't know. I take a step back to the science. I praise Harry Kane for trying to do something about it. I think we should wait until we have actual legitimate advice and not play like, you know, pretend epidemiologist here.
I'm with you completely.
Lucas Torreira isn't working out at Atletico Madrid, and reports say he could be joining Valencia on loan. Is this a better option, I presume, than bringing him back to Arsenal, Jules? Especially now that Thomas Partey's fit again, right?
The best option
The
best option is that he plays. Wherever that is, at Arsenal, if you want to bring him back, but there's no point bringing him back if he's on the bench and he's your fourth or fifth choice in midfield, and then he's going to play like 5 minutes there and 2 minutes there in the cup and things like that.
If Partey stays fit, because otherwise you're back to... El Neni every week.
Chaka, yeah, but, you know, of course, then bring him back. But again, bring him back if he plays. Otherwise, may as well play him somewhere else where he will play, get fit, get all those minutes and etc. Chucky Lozano comes up big for Napoli in the Coppa d'Italia. They beat Empoli 3-2. Gab, could he be Rino Gattuso's not really secret weapon, but still a secret weapon?
Could be. He's certainly playing a lot better this year. Yeah. And remember, and I've said this again and again, Mertens and Osimhen are really good players, and they're out. It was only the cup. It helps his confidence. And what's interesting is, until Osimhen returns, Napoli are completely different sides if Lozano plays up front or if Petagna plays up front, right? Because one guy's got speed and runs behind. The other guy is basically just a big lump who holds the ball and scores goals and works hard. So I really like, I know everybody laughs at me when I say, Napoli could still be the title hunt. I really like the squad. I think they're really, really good.
Yeah.
And Lozano's a big part of that. Tim Fosu-Mensah has joined Bayer Leverkusen. And of course, my friend Peter Boss. Jules, could this kickstart his career, given that United went through all the trouble of bringing him back and then they don't play him, they don't give him a new contract?
Yeah, certainly. And you would think that by Leverkusen investing on him is to play him, to develop him, and they clearly see the talent that is there. And I think he is talented. So good move for him. He had to go because there was no point staying if you were not playing at all. And he's still young enough to have a good career ahead of him. You saw Paul Pogba and Eric Bailly saying goodbye to him, which was quite emotional because I think they were all very close. And good luck to him in Germany. Manchester City have signed a partnership agreement with Bolivar in Bolivia, the biggest club in Bolivia. Gab, there's another angle to this. The City Group obviously have plenty of clubs everywhere. Troyes, by the way, in France, a few weeks ago as well.
There's a difference with these other clubs they have stakes in, right, them, that we know about, New York City FC and Melbourne and Yokohama Marinos. Here, it's just a partnership agreement. Now, the reason it's interesting is, okay, cynics are going to go out and say, oh, look, you know, City are going to do that thing where they sell them their intellectual property for a billion zillion. And I don't think it's that. But I think the question mark would raise for me, and I'm hoping MLS look into this, is the guy who owns Bolivar, the president, is a guy named Marcelo Claure, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, who the dude wears many, many hats because he's also the owner of Inter Miami.
Yeah.
And if all of a sudden he's got a commercial partnership agreement with Manchester City and is part of, or no, with Manchester
City Group,
with
yeah.
City Football Group own another team in MLS.
Yeah.
To me, this seems like a pretty evident conflict of interest. And again, before the City fans get angry at me, it's not City's business.
No.
It's not City's fault. But this guy has his finger in many different pots. He also happens to be the chief operating officer, I think, of SoftBank, who, of course, were the ones who were going to put up $20 billion or whatever the crazy figure was to have the Club World Cup and whatever, and who they also own WeWork. And,
yeah, there's enough.
Masashi, all this stuff. I mean, I don't know. I think the story's kind of flown under the radar.
Yeah,
and again, City fans, nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, from an MLS perspective, shouldn't there be rules about this?
Maybe, yeah. Conflict of interest a bit somewhere.
Just a little.
Just a little.
Unai Emery has revealed that he didn't want to sign Nicolas Pepe, but wanted Wilfried Zaha instead. Now, would things have turned out differently for him and for Arsenal?
I don't know. Maybe. But it's true. They even spoke on the phone, Unai and Wilfried Zaha. Unai explaining him how he wanted to play him and all of that. Yeah, maybe. Maybe it would have been different. I don't know. They're a different player, him and Pepe. You know, it's not the same. And
he's also would have cost the same money, and he's like 5 years older.
He's five years older, but you could also say that he knew the league, though.
Which is what Emery did.
Yeah, okay. So I don't know. I really don't see that. I don't think you should see transfer like this. It's always easy with insight to say, oh, we should not have signed him, but we should have signed him. We should have done this and not that.
I say this with a maximum love for Emery, who's doing a fine job again.
Yeah,
back
Villarreal.
In Spain, of course, at Villarreal and Champions League places. Do you think it was the phone call and hearing Emery's voice on the phone to Zaha, which killed the devil? Whatever. Maybe you should have spoken. Oh, sorry, I'm being unkind.
No. Former Barcelona president and current presidential candidate Joan Laporta claimed that the club had the chance to sign Cristiano Ronaldo way back in 2003, but that he has no regret that he didn't. I mean, Gab, one, is he lying? And two, how cool would he have been to see Messi and Ronaldo in the same team? So surely he regrets it anyway, if it's true.
And three, if you're running for president, is that really something you want to say? Like, oh yeah,
hey,
we could have signed him.
But for me, look what I did 20 years ago. Yeah, I missed on one of the greatest ever.
No, and on top of that, I have no regrets about it. I could put Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi together in a Barca shirt for 20 years, and I don't regret doing it.
Yeah, sign for me.
I don't know. Look, obviously, this is fantasy football stuff. I've made this point before, right? We've never had two legitimate 100% GOAT candidates, greatest player of all time candidates at this level, playing together as teammates on a club side.
You want to see it, don't you?
I would love to see it before these people retire. They would have to take huge pay cuts. It would have to be somewhere. I'm hoping, with no disrespect, I'm hoping it's not in MLS. I'm hoping it's not, you know, in the Gulf somewhere. I'm hoping it's for a cool team. It would be really cool if it happened, like, you know, if they. I'll give you one.
Okay.
What if they decide final year before they retire? Okay, so 6 months together,
right? Yeah.
At Newell's, and then 6 months together No, Marítimo or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
He wants to go home, man. Let him go home.
Okay.
All right. Is it Marítimo?
Yeah, or whatever.
That would be cool. But hey, who knows? We're in fantasy land. But yeah, Laporta, if you wanted my vote, and I don't get a vote in the Barcelona presidential elections, you just lost it by saying this. This is a silly thing to say.
Yeah.
Right. That's all we got time for. But Jules, it is top of the table time in the Premier League this weekend.
Sunday.
Liverpool and United. It's Juventus against Inter. I think we should come back on Monday and do this.
I think so too.
All right. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.